Blog Talk Radio.
So, I think that makes it tough. UFC 132 is this Saturday night. The co-main event features Chris Weidman versus Daniel Silva. Both those fighters fight in your weight class, and of course, you have had your issues with Vanderlei over the past year. Is that the fight now that you're a free man that you really had your eye on in terms of what's next for you?
You know, for media attention, but not for reality. Vanderlei's never in a million years going to sign and fight me. I don't think he beats Chris Weidman tomorrow. Vanderlei Silva has the worst record in the history of the UFC. Not just Zuppa-owned. Take it back to the SCG days. There has never been a fighter to have 2 wins and 7 losses and to stay employed in this company. I believe he will be 2-8 tomorrow night. So I can't imagine how he could get on the docket with me. So no, I don't think Vanderlei's paths are going to cross.
So we spoke to Vanderlei on Wednesday, and we asked him about you, and he said that, obviously, not a big fan of yours. He said that he wants you next, and when you do meet, his quote was, he will kill you, and he will kill you fast. I'm wondering if you saw that interview, and what do you think of this thing?
Vanderlei, you are an immigrant from Brazil. I am a gangster from America. Are you sure you want to play that game with me? Listen, Vanderlei, I will do a home invasion on you. I will cut the power to your house, and the next thing you hear will be me climbing up your stairs in a pair of night vision goggles I bought in the back of Soldier and Fortune magazine. I'll pick the lock to the master room door, take a picture of you in bed with the Nogueira brothers working on your jiu-jitsu. I'll take that photograph, post it at www.dorksfrombrazil.com. Password, not required. Username, not required. That, Vanderlei, is how you threaten somebody. Dummy. Here's what all that needs to be done with Vanderlei. It's as simple as this. Take a contract that says Vanderlei versus Chael Sonnen and have him sign that with your cameras rolling. He won't do it. Would it fight Brian Stann? Would it fight Vitor Belfort? Barely agreed to fight Chris Weidman. And he loves to talk tough, and I understand it. And we're in that business. But if we're being fair, take him a contract that puts him opposite of me, put a pin in his hand, roll the camera, and he will not sign it. Because he's scared and he sucks. This guy's delusional. This guy thinks his 22 wins in Japan were real. Was in the referee with an earpiece. Look, Vanderlei, you didn't win those fights in Japan. You had one fight in Japan, dummy. It was with Charles Crazy Horse Bennett, and you got knocked out.
But then again, when you got a guy so delusional that he really thinks he won those fights in Japan, nobody's like, let him in on the gag. Hey, Vanderlei, you didn't really win those. When you got a guy that delusional, you know good and well what I mean by that. You know good and well, Eris, you answer that question. Vanderlei's going to go 22 straight wins in Japan, and he can't win 2 straight in America. Mirko Krokop's going to win all those fights in Japan, he can't beat anybody in America. Fedor's going to win all those fights in Japan, and he's 3-2 in America, and one of those wins is over a guy that was flipping tires at Sam's Club the month before. Who's the latest guy? Yamamoto! Ken Yamamoto! 10 years, they told us. This is the greatest featherweight to ever live. He can't win a round in the UFC, let alone a fight. The only fighter to ever, from Japan, the only Japanese fighter to ever cut it in the U.S. is Yushin Okami, and he's the only fighter to never go through the Japanese circuit. The Japanese circuit is fake. It's always been fake. None of those guys won those fights. They never won those fights. Vanderlei Silva, 22-0. Mirko Krokop, one leg cemetery, one leg, you know, whatever. But what happened, Mirko? What happened to your legs? Nothing happened. The referee's not wearing an earpiece. The promoter didn't come in the back and tell your opponent when to go down. That's what happened. I lost my motivation. No, you didn't. You suck. You suck just like Fedor sucks. You suck just like Vanderlei sucks. Big difference when that referee's real in the narrow.
I think a lot of these civilian fighters are annoyed or disappointed or upset with you because you have taken shots at their home country.
All right, this is Ramble Rounds from Rich Bergeron.
Yeah, this is Tornado, Tony Pennycat. Nothing I love more than trash talk.
That was Chael Sonnen coming up with the wrestling is fake argument for Japanese MMA fighting. all of Wanderlei Silva's fights were fake, and he doesn't even know it. The referees were bought and paid for, and it was all fake over in Japan, which is pretty bold statement to make. I don't know if he's been hitting the testosterone again, but that's one of his latest rages. And he mentioned Brian Stann in passing in that interview. And that's actually been designated as his next opponent when he comes back in October this year. So he's in the news again. That was Ariel Helwani, who was interesting in the last the UFC free fight on versus Rampage Jackson was interviewed after the fight, and he wouldn't answer questions from Ariel Helwani, who's like the number one MMA journalist. You know, he's out there everywhere. He's working with AOL, and that's his interview right there that we started out with. And Rampage Jackson just want to talk to Ariel Helwani, because there was another guy there, Stefan Bonner. He was an actual MMA fighter, so Rampage just kept going to him for all the questions. And every time Ariel Helwani tried to ask a question, he raised his hands and shake. It's kind of funny. But Chael Sonnen, I mean, this guy's lucky to be even given an opportunity to fight again, and he's saying all this stuff about everything being fake in Japan. I mean, talk about conspiracy theories. I don't know if you can prove that. And, you know, he's got enough controversy surrounding him, but I guess the trash talk is just good for the UFC. They like that kind of stuff. And there's also talk about Wanderlei Silva now. We might just pay him to stay out of fighting. Because he did lose. That was one thing Chael Sonnen got right. He did lose at UFC. He was knocked out pretty badly. And then, of course, you know, he's got the background with testosterone replacement therapy. So people have been talking about him in relation to Nate Marquardt getting thrown out. But I'll tell you, boxing had a rough go about it in the heavyweight division this week.
Not for the fighters. There was barely any contact made.
I fell asleep before the fourth round, I'll tell you. Honestly,
I was ranting when we got on the air. I was pissed off with the internet. Why? Because I could have ratcheted me being pissed off at myself for avoiding the internet. I was at a baseball game on Saturday, left around 4 o'clock, obviously before flight time. Got up there. I didn't get home till around 11 o'clock, so I had DVR'd the fight. Now, I avoided all electronic media. I didn't take any text messages. I didn't go on Facebook to see, like, oh, that fight was great, or that fight sucked, or, you know, so-and-so wins. I avoided everything. So when I got home, I watched the fight like it was live.
Yeah.
And goddamn did it suck. And you know what? I put all the blame on one man, and that's David Haye. Could Klitschko done more? Yeah, maybe. Maybe he could have. Maybe he could have thrown more right hands. But the guy was like a jackrabbit running all over the place.
I heard that he had specified that there'd be 3 slip and slides in the ring, so he could dive canvas. I don't know what the hell he was.
And then, Haye didn't want to fight. And basically what he was doing was he's trying to draw a disqualification. You know, every time Klitschko would touch him, he'd get into a clinch, he'd fall down like Klitschko threw him. I mean, I've seen professional wrestlers take better falls.
Well, you know, there was some talk about performance-enhancing drugs. He needed some testosterone. He didn't have any. That was his biggest miss after the fight. He needed toe replacement therapy. That was his biggest. It absolves him from all responsibility for losing that fight. At a bad toe.
Maybe he needs heart replacement therapy.
Yeah, right. You know, I actually watched so much of the preliminary part of the whole broadcast from as it was happening over in the UK, and I found it pretty interesting how they showed Vitaly Klitschko in the jumpsuit, and he was getting ready to go and inspect the wraps against David Haye's locker. That's your brother. He looks just like you, and you know, Haye's just about to fight him, and he goes into the dressing room to check the wraps. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, right, right.
That was the most intimidating part of the whole fucking coverage, you know? And then I started watching the fight, and I literally fell asleep.
I miss a lot of the pre-fight stuff. Just figure, I just got back home. It's close to midnight. I'm still semi-intoxicated, and I'm tired because I was up, you know, at 6 a.m. that morning to go to work. So I was like, you know what? Fuck all the pre-fight shit. I'm fast-forwarding everything to my DVR to literally they're touching gloves. And I should have fast-forwarded through the whole fight and watched it on speed.
Now, did you watch any of the boxing on Friday night by any chance on ESPN?
I did not get a chance, unfortunately.
Oh, you missed it.
What?
You missed it, then. It was like, literally, I mean, this should the fight on HBO instead of the freaking...
Was that the one where there was the Filipino and the Hispanic fighter? And the Hispanic fighter came back and, like, was getting his ass kicked and came back to drop him, like, four times.
Sebastian Lujan. He was going in there, like he could take any punch this guy could throw. And this guy, Meligan, he's Filipino. He's kind of a wiry-looking kid. And he's beating the pants off of fucking Lujan the whole first three or four rounds. And then Lujan just starts coming in with his head down. And that was what was blowing my mind the whole fight, is that till the very ending bell, this kid was looking at the canvas, coming in with his head down and forward, and then just winging bombs left and right outside. And he got to the body more than anything, but once he started connecting to the kid's head, he knocked him down a couple times, and Meligan was done in the ninth round. And it was a hell of a comeback, but I would never teach anybody Lujan style. And he basically took the Homer Simpson approach to fighting. He went in there and just let the kid punch him in the temples, you know, thinking that the guy was going to get knocked out. And he kept taunting the dude, too, like shaking his head, sticking his tongue out, going, you know, you can't hurt me. And that just totally sucked the will out of Meligan because he hit him with everything that he had in his power to throw. I mean, he was just wasn't heavy enough. And this kid just went in on an experience, this Lujan, and just waited to see him drown in deep water. Just
it takes a very special fighter to fight that kind of style. I mean, that's like a Gotti type of style, something like that. You know, it takes a very, very special kind of fighter to be able to absorb that. Guys like Marvin Hagler could do it. You have to have a great chin. I think who's famous for that right now is what's his face, Liberato Andrade, out of Mexico. I mean, when he fought Lucian Butte, the first time he walked with everything Butte had. Andrade had this knockout win over Yusef Mack, who just fought Tavares Clout for the world title, because he walked with everything Clout could throw, and he basically wore him down by slamming his face repeatedly in the Mack's fist, so Mack ran out of gas. But to fight a style like that, first of all, you have to have tough skin that doesn't, you know, damage easily. You have to have a tremendous chin and unbelievable stamina, you know, conditioning. Marciano could do it. You don't see a whole lot of fighters that can absorb that anymore. What Butte did, which was very smart in the rematch with Andrade, was he went to the body. Figured if he couldn't take him out by hitting him in the head, he'd hit him with the body and put him out with one shot. But, yeah, my dad was telling me about it. See, I had to work on Saturday, so I really couldn't stay up too late. The card didn't start till 11. And, I mean, by the first fight, I was dozing off, and I didn't want to, you know, pop any caffeine, you know, drink any coffee or anything. Figure I had to be asleep because I had to be awake by, you know, 6.
Wow, that was a hell of a fight there.
Yeah, I didn't hurt.
Ricky Hatton retired from boxing officially. Big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, provided he hasn't been in the ring in over 2 years, and his last fight was very frightening. That loss to Manny Pacquiao, where he was on the canvas for a good number of minutes, not moving. So, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, Ricky was a tough fighter. I mean, he would never win points for having the best style.
he would never win points for, you know, being the most skilled guy out there. Ricky was a guy that basically the way he fought was, you know, he threw his heart and his soul into it, and he was a complete pressure fighter that would break you down. Now, I mean, I think it was beneficial that he got Tosh Jazoo when Tosh was on the downside of his career, and he just basically wore him out. I mean, he beat some other good fighters, you know, and basically all the same style. He lost that fight to Floyd Mayweather Jr. because basically, you know, fast enough to keep up with Floyd, and he was running himself into punches. You know, he wasn't able to smother Floyd. He wasn't able to, you know, break him down and wear him out. So, but then when he moved over and took Floyd Mayweather Sr. on as a trainer, that was really, it escalated his, or I should say accelerated his downfall, because Floyd's trying to teach him how to do, like, pity-pat type boxing, like he trained his son. Well, you don't train a fighter like Ricky Hatton to fight like a fighter like Floyd Mayweather. You don't do it. It's stupid. That's like trying to teach Mike Tyson to fight like Muhammad Ali. It doesn't work. And you could tell Hatton was confused in there. Like, he's like, should I bull rush and wear guys down, or should I box and use defense? And you could tell he was confused. And a little bit of confusion, a slight second in hesitation against a guy like Manny Pacquiao will get you knocked out. And case behold, there was Hatton laid out unconscious. The other thing with Ricky Hatton is Ricky's a party type guy. He's a big time drinker. His weight would balloon between fights, and they would call him Ricky Fatten. And you would know that. That human body. And it makes you age faster when you're always blowing up, cutting down, blowing up, cutting down. It affects you. And I think that was part of it, where he knew that, you know what, let's live back on the money. He's an icon still over in England. Let's just sit back and party, swig the Guinness, and enjoy being Ricky Hatton.
Yeah. And last song. He left the sport, and we'll see. Maybe he'll do some announcing or something down the line.
Good.
Better off there. We got the Jesus Fight of the Week this week on ESPN2. Tomorrow night, it's a super middleweight fight between Jesus Gonzalez. He's 26-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Francisco Sierra, who's 24-3 with 22 knockouts. One draw for the vacant NABF super middleweight title. Watch out. The big fight this weekend, though, is Saturday night. Arislam De Lara and Paul Williams.
That'd be an interesting fight, because you figure you really got to see how Paul Williams is going to come back from that vicious knockout.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. And, you know, Saturday that fight goes down, but it's going to be Friday for Chris Arreola. Do you know how that works out? So you can get,
yeah, I think so.
That's the trivia for the week. How can it be Saturday fight, but it's Friday for Chris Arreola?
Are you watching Dragnet with Sergeant?
Close. You're on the right track. You're getting there.
Very smart. He's fighting Friday the 13th, Akamura.
No. He's fighting on Saturday.
Right.
But it's Friday for him. Trick question. Nope. He's fighting Friday on Yata.
That's what I just said. Friday is the 13th, and I said Akimura. So I can remember his last name. But that's the guy's nickname, Friday the 13th.
I guess so. But there's a big Showtime card on Saturday, too. Brandon Rios and Urbano Antillon. Rios is 27-0 with 20 knockouts, and Antillon is 28-2 with 20 knockouts. Kermit Cintron is also on that card, 32-3, 28 knockouts, one draw. And he's fighting Carlos Molina, who just beat up Arislam De Lara and got a draw with him instead of a win. Here in Vegas, I saw that personally. So that's interesting. rooting for Paul Williams because I think he can take a guy like Lara. He's a little bit lankier. And Lara doesn't have that much power. I didn't see anything really impress me. Molina was really injured up to the body. Should have won that fight, and they called it a draw. So I think Herman Cintron is actually going to have a tough fight with Molina. He's like one of the most underestimated tough bastards in the sport right now. Molina, he just dismantled Lara. And didn't get the nod, unfortunately. But he's done well in Vegas anyway. Card looks pretty interesting. But Williams is going to have it at Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City on Saturday. And Ariel is on the undercard. Ahunanya. Friday, Ahunanya. That's how you say the last
name. He was doing well for a while. He's more on the downside now. Chris Ariola has really been impressing me. Ever since his loss last year to Thomas Adamack, he's really, really focused. I mean, he's dropped about almost 30 pounds. And you can see, he was a guy like Chris. What's always going to, you know, be a detriment to him is for a guy that, like, you know, he's a short, stocky, like to throw a lot of hooking punches, whether that's left hooks, uppercuts, or overhand rights. He's got to fight more out of a crouching style stance. You know, the reason guys like, you know, Mike Tyson, Rocky Marciano, and Joe Frazier were so successful for so many years, you know, they were giving up height and size to many of their opponents, but they would make themselves lower. Similar to when they were with Hay last week, who would, you know, make himself lower, but he wasn't exploding, you know, with his punches. When he fights a fight where he wants to explode, yeah, he gets in that crouching style and he springs, you know, almost like, you know, a tightly wound spring that just, you know, shoots out and, you know, attacks.
Well, I don't know if you heard today, Tony, but I'm going to drop a real big bomb on you if you haven't heard this news.
What's that?
It's pretty big news. I mean, you've heard about the NBA lockout, right?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think that means for boxing after the football?
They're going to put more boxing on network TV?
I guess you could say that, too, but there's another clue I'm looking for. NBA lockout. What do you think that means for boxing?
That means more NBA fighters are going to test their hand in boxing?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know what? I wouldn't mind that. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, this could be good for a couple reasons. I mean, it could be bad if guys get in the ring and, like, they, they embarrass themselves and they fight like shit and, you know, and it's very unentertaining and they're very sloppy.
Right.
You know, it's like Michael Jordan trying to hit a curveball. It was, you know, it wasn't pretty. But on the other hand, you're getting some top quality athletes. You get a lot of these guys that are big guys, you know, these are guys that are of Klitschko type size. You give them right training. You give them a guy like a Teddy Atlas or a Freddie Roach or an Emmanuel Stewart, and you have a potential to really find some diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
And if the NFL isn't on lockout, you know, you're still going to have potential diamonds in the rough with some other football players, not just guys like Tom Zivakowski, but some other guys too.
Right, and it was something I wanted to bring up today because, you know, there's news now that the Lakers' Andrew Bynum is taking boxing lessons, and there's a picture of him here on the internet in the ring with Freddie Roach. And this guy is tall with a muscular frame, and he's got reach, and he towers over Freddie Roach. So could it be the rebirth of the American heavyweight? If a lot of these basketball players who are just as tall as Klitschko go in there with those guys and something?
Here's the problem that I think, and I think it's, you know, with boxing being the sport that it is, you take a young guy, Rich. You know, you take, you know, a young inner-city kid, or any youth for that matter, and, you know, they're getting into sports. And you look at it, and say your goal, you're trying to get out of the inner city, you're trying to, you know, make something in your life, and it's like, well, shit, you know, I could, you know, go play basketball, get a scholarship to, you know, a university like, you know, Duke University or whatever. I basically don't have to go to class. I'm just one of the basketball stars here. I can go to Kentucky or whatever. So I'm basically getting out of the city. I get drafted. I'm already a millionaire, practically. So all I got to do is play basketball every night.
Yeah.
Something that I do every day as it is on the street. And I'm doing it and making money in front of millions of people. Or I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, take my hand at football. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm going to be a tight end. I'm going to be a defensive end. I'm going to be a running back, whatever. So linebacker maybe. So you go there and you get, once again, a scholarship to a school like, you know, say a big school, Penn State, University of Texas, Ohio State, big school like that. And you go on that. You play professional football. You hope you get drafted. If you do, basically you're going to make a good boatload of money. And you're going to play on a team sport. Now, granted, it might not last long, but all you got to do is make it as a pro, and you're making at least six figures, possibly seven figures, depending on, you know, how high you get picked or whatever. So you go into boxing. Well, most likely, you're still going to be where you started because you're going to be training in the same city that you're in. You're not going to get a scholarship to any university. And say you go into the pro ranks. Unless you're a highly ranked amateur, like a guy like maybe like the Danny Swift Garcia, as one of our more recent guys, or an Andre Ward that came out and got a contract, Oscar De La Hoya, or one of Floyd. You're going to start out fighting four rounders in some armory somewhere, making probably $400.
Okay? Yeah, Golden Boy is split with Mayweather.
What?
Golden Boy is now finished with Mayweather. There's news out there that they actually expect Ortiz to win that fight. They're actually quoted out there in the news. So I was like, whoa. They really hate Floyd now all of a sudden. And they don't think he's ready for the comeback. So that's why they actually were asked more of a question of, like, do you think Pacquiao versus Mayweather will ever happen? Like, it has nothing to do with the contracts or the blood testing. It has to do with the fact that Floyd's going to lose to Ortiz, which is sounds
well,
like a personal problem.
Here's
a pretty interesting boxing story. A British fan snuck into the VIP area for the David Haver versus Vladimir Klitschko fight, and he ended up sitting next to the British boxer's family at ringside for the fight, David Hay. Simon West, he's from Leeds, also ended up standing next to Vitaly Klitschko while he was getting interviewed on live TV and meeting boxing legends George Foreman, Roy Jones Jr., and German tennis superstar Boris Becker. It's the guy that did not have a VIP ticket. He got into the sectioned off area and had himself a little party. And got the pictures to prove it, too. More power to you. He says, I've never done anything like this before. It just all came together, and I rolled with it. It's like moving up in the extra innings of a baseball game. Get the front row seats. But he didn't see his fighter win, of course. But he got on TV for free. Let's see. We also have an interesting story about a guy named Brad Martinez who was on ESPN Outside the Lines this week. He's a featherweight MMA fighter. And he was on ESPN, I think, just last Sunday. And the guy is now signed by Bellator. He had an interesting story because he was helping with his father's physical therapy situation. And his dream was to make it big in MMA. And that night he was home and he cares for his father, who was in a traumatic accident with a brain injury. And so he does physical therapy with his father all night and, you know, trains during the day and only has one aide helping out with the situation. So they did a whole thing, went outside the lines on this guy, and then instantly Bellator comes along and picks him up. Pretty interesting story. We had UFC 132 over the weekend. It's July 2nd there, out here in Vegas, actually. The MGM Grand. And the big fight was a very controversial one, even though it was a unanimous decision for Dominic Cruz over Uriah Faber. And it was a little bit controversy. Some people didn't like it. You know, it was, of course, a five-round fight. Went the full distance. And also, Chris Leben wiped out Wanderlei Silva, who is, for all intents and purposes, done with his career in the UFC. He got knocked out by what they call dirty boxing in MMA, Tony. You know, boxing. You throw uppercuts on the guy, right? You can't hold him, pull his neck down as you do it, right?
No.
That's why they call it dirty boxing in MMA, because you can do that. With thinner gloves on, basically, they even pulled the street fighting move on. Wanderlei had been off the shelf for so long, been training guys. Comes back to the octagon and goes up against this guy, Leben, who's just fearless. Leben comes in and grabs him by the back of the neck and just hauls off with about seven uppercuts. Wanderlei is out on the ground, trying to wrestle the ref after a little while. And then he's out on the ground. Leben just went to town. And I didn't realize he had that crappy record in the UFC. There's a jail sentence at the beginning of the show tonight. Courtesy of Ariel Helwani. But that was the fight of the night, I think, really. It was pretty interesting. And then, of course, Tito Ortiz, everybody wanted to write him off, even me. And he beat Ryan Bader by the guillotine choke. First round. So he really was fighting with a lot of intensity, trying to save his career. And proved his agent to move on. Also had Dennis Seaver beat Matt Wyman by unanimous decision. Melvin Guillard knocked out Shane Roller with punches in the first round. Carlos Condit hit Dong Hyun Kim with a flying knee and punches in the first round to win that fight. Rafael Dos Anjos beat George Soteropoulos by probably the best punch of the night. It was kind of more of a flash knockout. Dos Anjos knocked out Soteropoulos with a minute left in the round. Actually, a minute into the round. Brian Bulls, the unanimous decision win over Takeya Mizugaki. Aaron Simpson beat Brad Tavares by decision. Anthony Njokuwani. It's a tough one. Had a winning performance against Andre Winner, who was the loser. And then Jeff Hoagland won over Johnny Walker by unanimous decision. And it was a pretty interesting card. And tonight, actually, our special guest later on, in about 45 minutes or so, we're going to have Shaw Bonus, who was the dude who helped Dominic Cruz get ready to fight Uriah Faber. So I'm sure he'll have a lot of insight on the winner of that main event fight there. They went all five rounds. Which is really what makes, I think, the lighter weights in the MMA most interesting, is because they typically go longer distances. You know, you actually get to see a fight and strategy and all that. And since I never really watched the WEC, it's very interesting to see those guys in the UFC, where you kind of have to watch them if they're one of the main events. So it's interesting, but I don't know. If they're going to start having these main events, not just title fights, be five rounds, I think they got to start paying these guys more.
Yeah, I think they'll never do that.
Yeah, I know. As I said earlier, though, you know, this guy, you're buying up, you know, getting into boxing, being coached by Freddie Roach. I mean, that sort of thing makes me think, because a lot more guys are going into boxing from these other sports than are going into MMA. The only MMA guy I can think of is Brashear in Canada going into MMA. and winning his first fight. And by the way, congrats on getting Yager out there in Philadelphia.
Oh, thank you.
Pretty.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I think he's gonna kick some ass.
You think? I don't know. Here's all I know, though. Yager, for the longest time, was when he was, whether he was with the Penguins or the Rangers, and they'd be introducing the lineups. And in fact, you'll appreciate this being from Boston. They would announce them, and they would play a few lines from a famous Boston rock and roll group called, you ever hear Aerosmith?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, they would play the song, damn it, dude, looks like a lady.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
So I still, I don't know how I feel about him.
Well, we'll see how good he is. He hasn't been playing in the NHL recently.
Yeah, he's been over in Russia.
But he still is one of the best hockey players that the NHL has ever seen, I think.
Very true.
So I'm sure he hasn't lost too much. But anyway, that's pretty much all the big news. We got six fighters out up to 6 months on suspensions from the fighting at UFC 132. So not only do I think there's a disparity in pay, but I think we're starting to see a disparity in major injuries in these fights. I don't necessarily think that the boxing guys fighters could be up to 6 months after UFC 132 Saturday. Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber, they both fought the five-round fights. They're suspended until December 30th. So, that's a long time. Yeah. Also, Dong-Hyun Kim, first-round knockout. Shane Roller, first-round knockout. Bowles and Anthony Njikuani. All have 6 month suspensions. He could be cleared early by his physician, though. And Dominic Cruz has to have his right hand x-rayed before he gets clearance. Uriah Faber must have his right hand, wrist, and right shoulder and chest x-rayed. And that's going to mean he's going to get cleared early by a physician. Minimum suspension until August 17th. No contact until August 2nd. Silva is suspended until September 1st because of his knockout. Seaver is suspended until August 17th for forehead lacerations. Dieter is suspended until July 25th for getting choked out. Dong-Hyun Kim and Shane Roller are both out until December 30th for right orbital fractures. So, they got fucked up.
Yeah, I'll say that.
It doesn't happen that much in boxing, though. Seems to happen a lot in MMA, though. Gillard is suspended until July 24th for a cut on his eye. Soteropoulos is at the knockout suspension until September 1st. Bowles has to have his right hand x-rayed and is suspended until December 30th. Tavares is out until August 2nd for eyebrow laceration. No contact until July 24th. Winner is suspended until August 2nd for facial bruising. And this is a good one. Anthony Njikuani is suspended until December 30th for a lower left leg contusion. That must be a pretty bad bruise to be out until December 30th. Your leg's messed up. And then there was another eyebrow cut for Donnie Walker. He's out until August 2nd. So do you think there's that many boxers that get suspended that long after a boxing?
Yeah.
So I think that kind of showed.
Yeah, I mean, when you get a suspension in boxing, it's like a big deal. When you hear of one. When you hear about like Fernando Vargas or James Toney testing positive for steroids or anything, then the suspension, that was like a big deal.
Hey, now that the Casey Anthony trial is over, it's all about Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
His trial starting on steroids. And steroids has just happened to be a big... had a big surge, you could say, in mixed martial arts with this testosterone replacement therapy. And it just blows my mind. But they've, number one, set up this stipulation where you just have to let them know that you're on it and you can do it if you're cleared. But, you know, how do you not use that? They're not testing you. To take an advantage of the actually working out to get ready for the fight. I don't know. It's and then to have a guy like Chael Sonnen, they pushed so much for so long to get him back, and now he's back. But the other guy, Nate Marquardt, gets thrown out of the UFC. The other guys that have lost three in a row in the UFC, they get thrown out. Right, but Wanderlei Silva. Chael Sonnen says one thing he is right about is the guy has a losing record in the UFC, and most other guys would have been thrown out by now.
Yeah.
And he's getting special treatment and almost promised a golden ticket retirement, too. Publicly. Dana White is saying stuff like that. So, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of different people get special treatment. That's going to catch up to them. But boxing, we'll see. We'll see what the what else comes out of the NBA lockout. Supposedly, it's going to be worse than the NFL lockout.
That's what I've heard.
So we might see a few boxers step into the boxing ring. And it's funny because even though there are way more people that get into boxing rather than MMA from the other professional sports, you know, these guys, actually, a lot of them train in MMA and jiu-jitsu, but they just won't compete, you know. And maybe that is because of the injury factor, but they'll train in it. They just won't compete. Although there is, I just did think of another exception. Herschel Walker, of course, comes from being retired from football, going in and doing MMA. So he's another athlete that turns to MMA, but very rare. More so the boxing. And actually, there was talk about Kimbo Slice when he was talking about getting his first boxing match under his belt. They were talking about putting up against a football player in the lockout who just turned to boxing. I forget the guy's name. I think he's like a lineman, heavyweight. Kimbo called him out already. So we'll see what happens. Somebody's got to fight Vladimir Klitschko on his level, though. I was thinking basketball.
Well, I know Alexander Povetkin finally said he's going to call Klitschko out now to, you know, cash in on the fight that he, the number one contender fight that he won like 3 years ago. But it's like, you know, Povetkin took himself out of everybody's mind. When he was still a potentially hot commodity, you know, he didn't want to take the fight. And, you know, I think that kind of backfired in his face. I mean, maybe it didn't, because maybe he was waiting for Klitschko to get older. I don't know. David Haye wanted a rematch, but they said he's most likely to get a fight with Vitaly before he would get Vladimir again. Maybe, see, here's the thing. Vladimir is a very cautious type fighter. Vitaly is more of an aggressive type fighter. Maybe that would have turned into maybe a more entertaining fight because Vitaly would have maybe stepped on the gas pedal and went for the knockout.
Right. Well, it was unfortunate to see it go down like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was pretty dreadful.
But it's going to take somebody who has a jab that's at least as long or as powerful.
Well, here's what it's going to take.
That everything else.
You know what? If I was training a guy, see, here's it's easy to say, here's the game plan that I would employ, and then get a fighter that can employ. When you're fighting a guy that has such a hard jab, and that is so big and that is so strong, if I was training a fighter and putting him into a fight with Vladimir Klitschko, what you first thing you've got to do is you've got to neutralize his jab. David Haye could have done that. But to do that, you have to be willing to jab with Klitschko. Now, why was a guy like Ken Norton so successful when he fought Muhammad Ali and giving Ali trouble? Ken Norton was trained by Eddie Futch. Eddie Futch masterminded two of the game plans that beat Muhammad Ali, that being Joe Frazier's pressure style and Ken Norton's awkward style. Now, and Eddie Futch explained later in life, you fight a guy like Ali who banks on his jab. You can't try to slip it and counter it. You can't try to block it and counter it. You can't try to parry it and counter it. You have to hit him when he's throwing it. So what he did was one of the very first things that they taught me down in South Philly. Use the right hand to catch the punch, and when you see that shoulder twitch, you throw yours at the same time. You stick it in his mouth, and that makes him stop jabbing. So the one thing you've got to do is you've got to develop, and if you're a shorter guy, like most guys fighting Vladimir Klitschko will be, you've got to be able to step to the side just a little bit. So say, okay, take David Haye again. Say they're fighting a rematch, and I was working Haye's corner. The first thing I'm going to have him do, instead of retreating when Klitschko throws that jab, when Klitschko throws it, you throw your right hand up, you catch it, and then at the same time, as soon as that arm moves, you stick your own jab. You step one step over to your left, you shorten the distance, and you stuff it right in his mouth. And hopefully what that'll do is you do that a few times, that'll get Klitschko to stop using his jab, because every time he throws it, he gets punched in the mouth. Then you neutralize his jab that way, then you can stick to him because you don't have that telephone pole weapon keeping you at bay. Now you can get closer to him. Now, what a guy like Corey Sanders did was Corey Sanders was able just to use real short punches. He was a southpaw to, inside. He came inside of Klitschko's punches with short little, shots and was able to eventually stun him, drop him, and knock him out. So that's how you're going to do. You're going to be very short. You can't have wide arcing punches like Haye was throwing because they were slow and they were basically throwing a lot of breeze. What you got to do is very short, right down the pipe. So you neutralize his jab, and then you land short right hands. He's open for it. That's, if I was training, that would be my first game plan. Then maybe a chance, maybe you'd want to double your right hand. Maybe throw it to the body and the head.
Right.
That would be my game plan.
Not suck at the heavyweight. That could help him out. He took on a bunch of bums to get this fight, really, at heavyweight. Nobody really that significant. And, I think he tried to treat Klitschko like the big Russian, 7-foot-tall guy, the monster, who was really like Frankenstein's monster, Russian boxers. And he had all kinds of surgery. He was out for a while. I don't know how successful he's been since he's back, and he's back now, but... the Russian giant. That fight really was what got people talking about him, because it was such a freak show. But I think to go right to Vladimir for the competition that he's faced is kind of unfair. I don't think he really was in the best position to give that much of a opposition to this guy. He's like, in boxing, at his size and his build, at the wrong place, the wrong... be in Rocky Marciano's day, he would be close to 185, so he'd look better. But not today, not with the Klitschko guys. Not with the water they're drinking. But it was definitely, you know, a big hyped fight. There was a lot of buzz surrounding it. It was kind of oversold. It had a lot of MMA guys talking smack, of course, saying that MMA has much better draws than boxing. All of a sudden. But I think worldwide, boxing will always have an edge on MMA. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, it's not too much for huge boxing matches coming up this weekend, but I know that boxing back at the Cosmopolitan July 29th. Any other boxing last weekend than those two big fights there?
Unfortunately, no, I didn't. Working on Saturday, you know, that kind of threw my whole weekend into a tiff. Because I had to go to bed early Friday night, and then Saturday I was out. I didn't get home until after midnight.
The UFC show was kind of interesting. Definitely was up for that entire show. Nothing really put me to sleep. The Klitschko fight.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm like all set up watching it on the live feed through the computer from as it happens, you know. Not waiting for the HBO broadcast. And just couldn't hang. Still haven't gotten back to try to watch it either, because I just looked at the headlines and I was like, oh, I don't even want to watch it. But, of course, we got some MMA fights this weekend, but really there's nothing huge until the 23rd of July for mixed martial arts in the big league circuit. That's the next event, Bellator. Not even a UFC or a Strikeforce event. So there's a little time here for boxing to prove itself. If it needs to prove anything. But there are a bunch of, course, smaller circuit MMA shows. M1 Challenge 26 is a big one on the 8th tomorrow. From Costa Mesa, California, Garner versus Bennett Chu. Fight nights in Moscow, Russia, for all you Ruskies. Seconds Out Vivid MMA also has a fight tomorrow night. St. Paul, Minnesota. Combat on Capitol Hill. Fight Republic, Reno's Downtown Showdown in Reno, Nevada here. Which is surprisingly a lot farther from Vegas than I thought it was before I came out here. It's like an 8-hour drive, something crazy like that, from Vegas. We have Axe Combat 1 Evolution from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, on Friday. And we got a ton of fights on Saturday. Brazilian Fighting Championship in Sao Paulo, Nitro MMA, Queensland, Australia. Allegiance 3 in New South Wales, Australia. Jackson's MMA Series 5 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Bad Boys WFC 2 from London, England. FNA Round 15 Armed Forces in Bellevue, Washington. Young Guns at the Fusion Nightclub in Cumbria, England. Cumbria. Next Level Fighting Championships 1 from Elkton, Maryland. Centurion Mixed Martial Arts 2 from Katerina, Brazil. Chaos at the Casting Center in Mandeville, Louisiana. Bombs Away from Parma, Ohio. MMA Big Show's Rumble at the Wyndham from Indianapolis, Indiana. NFC Promotions Hits in the Hills in Logan, Ohio. That sounds like a tease for football, doesn't it? NFC, what's that? Combat Zone 30, KZ30, from Waterloo, Indiana. It's all on Saturday. MMA Brawl Room Fight Expo 1 from Yankee Lake Brawl Room in Niles, Ohio. I guess that's an appropriate name place for fights. That makes me want to fight. I'm fighting at the Brawl Room. The Yankee Lake Brawl Room. I want to fight an ex-Yankee baseball player at the Yankee Lake Brawl Room in Niles, Ohio. Wow. Sun City Battle in El Paso, Texas is also on Saturday. Hometown Throwdown in Carlinville, Illinois. Cage Warriors Fighting Championship 43 in North London, England. And last one on Saturday is 15th Ring in Tokyo, Japan. We have a few fights on Sunday. A couple in Japan. One in Greater Manchester, England, the Salford Fight Factory, Site Icon 8. We got Pancrase Gate 8th Chance in Tokyo on Sunday, and Cage Impact 2011 in Nagoya. Aichi, Japan. That's it. Until next week. For MMA, WFC, no Bellator, no Strikeforce. That's it. Just to go to your local brawl room. MMA. So New Yorkers are out of luck. We're going to have a tough time. Although it was kind of interesting on the ESPN Behind the Lines, I think it was, what they were showing this week, the illegal brawls that people set up in their backyards that have obviously no insurance. The ring was actually tied together with freaking caution tape, like crime scene tape. The fight that I saw, one of them. So, like, oh, jeez. And the local cops, they know that stuff's going on, but they just don't do anything about it. This guy charges admission, and people bet on the fights. It's pretty brutal. So it's out there, whether the sport's regulated or not. We'll do it in backyard. And that doesn't surprise me, actually, too. There's a guy that runs a camp. It's a Florida camp. And he was a friend of Kimball Slice growing up. So he organizes his own backyard fight league. Unbelievable stuff. In a few minutes here, we're going to have Shaw the Bonus. A bonus with Shaw the Bonus. We got a few minutes until then. If anybody wants to call in and chat with us, you can call 347-324-3228 and be on live on the show. You can talk smack about any MMA fighter you want. But whatever controversial subject is on your mind. What's combat sports related? Well, we got Bonus. He's an up-and-coming fighter who trained with up the camp of Dominic Cruz. And Dominic Cruz himself trained to fight Uriah Faber. And he's fought some pretty impressive guys. It comes from a league called Combate Extremo. And I interviewed their president not too long ago. And he said they were around long before the UFC in the United States. And this kid's had a lot of fights. His last fight was actually Fight Time 4 MMA Heavyweight Explosion in March earlier this year. He won by first round TKO. And that was his second fight in a row. He also won in January of this year by submission at the Rad Rock MMA Championship. And his last fight in Combate Extremo was March 17th, 2010. Actually, April 2010. Okay, he's been all over the place. Sean Bonus. We got a fight coming up on August 27th. Marcos Maidana versus Robert Guerrero. Am I reading this correctly? Yeah, Robert Guerrero, Saturday, August 27th versus Marcos Maidana. Came out the other day. August 27th at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. It's going to be on the HBO Boxing After Dark broadcast. That should be a good fight. Guerrero's looked really good in his latest fights, and so has Maidana. Guerrero's 29-1-1 with 18 KOs. He's only been a boxer since 2001. Keeps looking better and better. In wrestling news, Scott Hall is in the news again because he got arrested.
Oh, boy. Now what's he doing?
I don't know. From what I heard, it's a good thing for to have him behind bars. But he's making appearances all screwed up on drugs. I don't even know what he got arrested for, but it's been in the news every day, last couple days. Oh, big news I totally forgot about earlier on in the MMA is that Brett Rogers got thrown out of Strikeforce. for beating the living shit out of his wife.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he went domestic dispute all over her face. And she was found walking down the street trying to tell people that she fell, you know, and, like, trying not to get him arrested and blaming herself for it. But she hit him first. She admitted to that. But then he just went nuts. He admitted to drinking. And so they threw him right out of the strike force. Brett Rogers. So he obviously didn't take to getting that crap kicked out of him the other night very well. And it's unbelievable that what he did, and he had so much, you know, intimidation factor over this lady that she didn't even want to say what happened after the fact when she's walking down the street all battered up. So it's not looking good for Brett Rogers. He's going to join the PFL, Prison Fight League. I think he's going to be that hard to convict him. Spousal abuse or whatever they're going to throw the book out for. He probably deserves it. He really busted her up pretty good. And said he was drinking. Obviously, it's another story, but don't be drinking. Get arrested. Please don't drink and beat people. You have a habit of drinking and beating people. You should probably stop drinking. Just a thought. Just saying. All right, we're gonna give our interview subject here a call. And people, Shaw Babonis.
Hello?
Hello, Shaw.
This is him.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
What's up, brother? How's it going?
Pretty good. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line. He's our boxing expert.
Yo, nice. What's up?
How's it going, brother?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad.
Good. We're going to talk some boxing or MMA? I love both.
All right. Well, you're a perfect guest for our show because we touch on both.
Nice.
If you want to engage Tony in the conversation, you pretty much have to go to boxing because it isn't like that MMA stuff that much.
All right. Well, he'll come over to the dark side sooner or later.
Oh, hear that, Tony? Is that a threat or a promise?
It's contagious. The MMA fear is contagious. Nobody can stop it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, because it seems like if you have two strong disciplines in MMA, you can get pretty far, even though you have to be always well-rounded and expect anything to happen. But it seems to me like the boxing is one of those overlooked areas of MMA that if people are really good at, it makes a huge difference, you know.
I think it definitely does, especially if you look at a guy like Dominic Cruz. Like, granted, his boxing isn't the most orthodox thing you've ever seen, but he has good footwork, and he's a pot shot type guy. You know, he'll pick his spots and usually doesn't throw more than two punches in a combination, but his footwork deters a lot of wrestling, you know. So his boxing has its place in MMA, definitely.
And what was it like to get him ready for that Uriah Faber fight? And especially now that the featherweights are being televised on the UFC cards.
Yeah, I tell you what, me coming, I started boxing in the amateurs before I ever got into MMA. I did do a little bit of wrestling in junior high and high school, but the guy's footwork is very awkward. And it totally threw me off for like the first five to ten rounds that I sparred with him. It was very tough adjusting to it. It messes up your boxing and it messes up your wrestling as well.
And where'd you wrestle?
I wrestled at Miami Southridge Senior High School. Until recently, they had the second highest number of state titles behind Brandon High School in Florida. Then I wrestled in junior high as well.
Did you compete at all on the collegiate level?
No, at the collegiate level, I played baseball, and then I played actually a little bit of pro ball also.
I read that you were in the minor leagues for baseball. What team?
I was in the Seattle Mariners farm system.
What years?
It was 99 through 2002. It was a short-lived little stint in the minors. I got progressively worse. I was chasing too many skirts and having too much fun.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm trying to remember. Was Raul Ibanez with the Mariners then, or did he come with them later?
You know, to tell you the truth, I didn't get above A ball. So a lot of those guys that were like hot prospects, they would move them right along. Before you knew it, they're in High A, Double A, Triple A. Especially if the organization had invested a lot of money in them. So I didn't
right.
see a lot of those guys that got up right away. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
We were more like guys that they didn't have a lot of money invested in. We always got the feeling we were more like fillers to see what those hot prospects could do and then send them up along the way, you know, straight up the ranks, straight to the majors pretty quickly.
So what
did you ever get to do any, during spring training at all, did you ever get to be with, like, the main squad, or they still keep you in the lower minors?
No, I never got to, spring training with, like, the 90-man squad or anything like that, you know. So I did after the amateur draft in 99, I spent half the year in the minors at rookie ball, and then I reported to A ball after that, the year after that, and then I was released.
Yeah, well, Rich, even though this is a combat sports show, Rich and I, it's dependent on, you know, what tangents we get on, so we'll talk about anything, especially on nights when it's just he and I. You know, we'll sit there and, you know, we'll talk, and, you know, we'll talk baseball. I'm a Phillies guy. I'm from Philadelphia. He's a Boston guy, so, you know, we always argue about that. We'll talk football. We'll talk hockey. God, we'll talk. We've had professional wrestling guests on the show.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah, I watch a little WWE every once in a while.
any sport like that, it does the stuff for entertainment, you know, and still produces guys who come over and cross over to MMA. You know, it's important to, I guess, pick up some things from there.
Yeah, I heard a lot of guys are training MMA in the off season just to stay in shape. You know, professional athletes in general.
Right, yeah. I mean, we were just talking about that earlier, actually, because it seems like what's making the news at least more often is the guys that are going from these major professional sports that are having lockout issues, like football and now the NBA, going to boxing. But then,
right.
And at the same time, a lot of these guys already work out in MMA. You know, they just
right.
compete at MMA. I guess it's safer for their insurance if they just get boxing.
Exactly, yeah. I tell you what, these guys rushing them out nowadays, they better watch out who they're going after when they run up there. They don't know if the guy's been training MMA for a couple of years, choke them out in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
actually, a couple of years ago, shortly after I took over as a co-host on the show with Rich, we were interviewing Ken Shamrock, and Rich had interviewed him before. It was my first chance to talk to him. And one of the first questions we asked him was, you know, Ken, you lost your last fight? He goes, no, I didn't. And we're like, yeah, you did. He goes, no, I didn't. We're like, what are you talking about? He goes, about a week ago, I had a little argument on the road. A guy came running out of his car and came after me, and I took him out pretty quickly. And I'm like, well, did the guy realize who you were as he was running towards you and wetting his pants at the same time?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, specifically, I remember he said he was in his flip-flops because he'd just come from taking his kids to the water park. And, of course,
right.
Road rage incident pops up out of nowhere, and he literally has to dispatch some guy in the street.
Right. Yeah, that actually almost happened to me the other day as well here in Miami. It's funny.
Yeah, that's the worst thing to do, like get yourself into that situation or have that happen to you when you have fighting experience. I'll never forget probably a perfect storm type of road rage incident I had when I was working for a newspaper. And I pull out of a driveway. It's this blind drive. I'd boxed before and wrestled. And so I pull out, and then all of a sudden, I just hear this huge, loud, sharp honking. It almost made me drive off the road because it was just out of nowhere. All of a sudden, this guy was behind me in a truck honking at me. So I was delivering newspapers as part of my job. That was just what I was doing at the time. I just instinctually put my finger out the window and gave him the bird.
Right.
So a mile down the road, a school bus stops, and the stop sign flips out. So I got to stop. He jumps out of his truck, and he's right up in my window, which is open. And I would have just apologized. I would have been fine. This guy was out of his tree yelling at me. But then he just leaned in, and he spit in my face.
Oh, my God.
So I got out. I popped the door out. I stood face to face with him. He hit me with like a jab to the lip, and then I just grabbed him by the front of the shirt and just hauled off with like four or five right hands till his head was bleeding.
Oh my goodness.
Dragged him off the back of the hood and then ended up on top of him, and I even asked him, I said, have you had enough? And he shook his head. He literally said, more. And I let him go. I got up and just walked away. But you get into a situation where it's all instinct and shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, you don't have a switch anymore.
Yeah, you kind of go blank for a little while.
It's great when that happens in a fight and you can use it to your advantage, but, like, when it's in a real-life situation like that, like, I used to get scared when I get into a street fight. That's what made me want to box more.
yeah, definitely.
The one that Rich and I I've talked about on here before. Now I'm going back about 5-6 years ago. I guess it was about 2005, so it was about 6 years ago. You know, I was around 28, 29 years old. You know, and I always go to one local nightclub in the Philadelphia suburbs. It's a real laid back kind of place. I know all the bartenders. I know the bouncers. I even know a couple of the bands that play there. And when certain bands play, I always go and hang out with them. We have some drinks between sets. And it's just a real cool place. You know, they wanted me to be a bouncer there. I mean, I told them no. I bounced a little bit when I was in college at my house when we had some parties there. And I had, and I'm not a tall guy. You know, I'm a guy, and when I was in college, I was about 5'8", about 185 to 190-some pounds. So I'm not a big guy. So when guys that were taller than me would try to intimidate me, I had one guy, sprung at me, and I dropped him. Just instinct, yeah. As you said. So we're at the bar one night, and I have a friend of mine, he's crippled. He always has a cane or a walker, and he goes to see a lot of live bands. So wherever he goes, they take him right up to the stage so he can lean on the stage so he can, he's comfortable. And right. It was that night, it was me, him, and another young girl that was a friend of mine. And she was kind of, like, taking care of him that night, And it was around 1 a.m., I'm done drinking, my hands are empty, and we're up near the back of the, back of the dance floor, just hanging out, watching the band play. And the guy that was singing at the time was a very good friend of mine. I was just hanging out with him in Florida a couple months ago. And this girl that I'm with is like, listen, I'm going to go check on Lucky, see if he's okay or if he wants to leave. I said, okay. I said, if you need me, come get me. I'll help him get in the car or whatever. So as soon as this girl walks away, and she's all 5'2", this guy, about maybe 5'11", 6 foot, comes barging up behind me, shoves me out of the way, and he starts cursing at the guy singing the song. And I'm like, all right, this asshole's drunk, I'm not thinking much of it. And one of his buddies tried to kind of pull him off the stage, and he threw an elbow me right in the face.
And I lost it. And I grabbed the guy by his collar, and I shoved him off the dance floor. I said, why don't you get out of here, you asshole? And he said, what, you want to fight? And the trigger said, yes. And I got my stance. Now, I'm a boxing guy, as we said on the show. I'm a boxing guy, and I competed in the on the collegiate level. I was in the same weight class as Rich was. We almost fought each other. So I'm a very much a traditional boxer. You know, I trained in Philadelphia. I trained. Did you ever hear of the old Philly Gym Wars? I can tell you,
yeah,
Adam. I was in a number of them. You know, so the hand, my right hand goes up to my jaw. My left hand drops down like that Oscar De La Hoya type stance where you keep the left hand low, that Bernard Hopkins stance. And
right,
the left
right.
hand went low, and I'm baiting him in. I'm like, you want some? He's like, cool, you want to fight? And I started actually bouncing on my toes. And I said, I drew a line on the floor. And I said, once he crosses it, I'm coming up with a left hook over the top, and I'm taking him out. It's going to be, you know, like a Joe Frazier, you know, famous left hook. And this guy's going out. And he's like, you want some? You want some? I'm like, come on, buddy, I'm waiting on you. Let's go. And I said, bouncing. Four bouncers grab him. They start dragging him out. I start following him out the door. I'm like, I'll dance with you right now and all your boys. And two off-duty bouncers that knew me, they were having some drinks, got up, and they formed like a 300-pound, you know, offensive lineman. I had two of them in front of me saying, you sit down. They're like, we cannot let you outside to kick the shit out of this guy because we cannot have his blood on our hands tonight, and we know you'd put him in the hospital. They're like, sit down at the bar. The rest of the night, all your drinks are on the house. You cannot leave this bar. We know he is long gone.
Yeah, that's always better to try to avoid it and just save yourself a lawsuit.
Oh, absolutely. Because I'll tell you right now, I mean, I would have hit the guy. He was going down with a broken nose. And then, you know, and then he probably would have hit his head on the ground, then it would have got worse.
Yeah, you never know. He might hit his head on the ground and die, and then you got manslaughter on hand, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
never a good situation.
I'm also one of those lucky people who has had a bottle smash over his head because of fighting in a park and people drinking too much.
Yeah.
And, ironically, I was just trying to break shit up, you know, and somebody...
Well, it always ends up that bad. The peacemaker, the messenger gets shot.
Yeah, it sucks. But anyway, Sean... Tell us what's your ultimate goal in the sport of MMA as a fighter?
As a fighter, I want to get on a big show. You know, I want to fight the best in the world before I'm too old. You know, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. You know, I'm 32. You know, I lived a lot of life, so I got to get this fighting thing out of my system. Yeah, you know, I just don't. You know, this sport hurts a little bit, so I want to get my goals out of the way. And then, like, my heart's in coaching, really. I love working with guys. I probably get more out of, like, seeing a guy that I train with win than I do actually seeing myself win, you know. So I definitely want to coach, maybe open a gym, and finish my career in MMA on that side of the game.
Now, you've had some experience with this Combate Extremo down in Mexico. What was that like? We've had the president, I think, or the owner of that company on before.
The fans over there in Mexico are really passionate, man. You go over there and you walk out to the ring and they're cursing at you and, you know, calling you every name in the book. But after the fight, you know, they want to take all the pictures with you and they're great, though, you know what I mean? And it's always a lot of fun to go down there and fight. And they got some great stand-up guys down there, so Muay Thai and boxers. They're still got a little bit of ways to go on the ground, but they put on some exciting fights.
All right. And what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
I think preparation in the sense of getting in great shape is really the most important thing. You know, the more times you go through it, the type of shape you know you need to be in to win a fight and to fight 15 or 25 minutes straight. And, you know, if you don't have the cardio, then really all the technique in the world isn't going to help you because you're not going to be able to execute it.
Yeah, that's one thing that, you know, when I started wrestling in high school, I had more boxing experience at the time. And when she started doing those spin drills, you start realizing how much cardio you need and how the blood goes right to your muscles, and it becomes hard to breathe and too hot in a heartbeat. In a situation where you're grappling and wrestling with somebody in addition to throwing punches. You know, it's a different type of cardio. You know, it has to be like high intensity as well as you can take deep breaths and control your breathing when you have to.
Yeah. You know, what I've seen in the gym a lot too also is you get guys from different backgrounds. You get guys from striking backgrounds, and when they're on their feet, they can box or kickbox 10 rounds straight with no problem. They get on the ground and they gas out pretty quick. But the same thing with grappler. You know, on the ground, he's grappling all day. You get him up on the feet and he starts getting all tense because he's not really comfortable on his feet, and he gasses out real quick striking. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, definitely.
Yeah, you know what, too? It seems to me that they reward, especially in the UFC level, more of a striker's game nowadays. I mean, of course, you have the submission of the night victory, but win of the night, fight of the night.
Yeah, well, I think MMA is a little cyclical in the sense, just like fashion is, you go through your phases. You know, when MMA first kicked off, you know, the grapplers had a huge advantage. Then wrestlers with a little bit of submission defense, like Matt Hughes, had a good little run. And now you're seeing guys that have a little bit of submission defense, have a little bit of takedown defense, and can really strike, having a good time at it, like Anderson Silva and so on. I mean, you know, so I'm sure, you know, everybody's going to, every style is going to have probably make their little comeback here every so often.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities with boxing that people don't realize. Like, in the UFC now that they've merged with the WEC, it seems like a lot of attention is going to the lower weight guys, you know. Like,
right.
The thing is, these guys over in Russia that are dominating the heavyweight divisions, nobody wants to talk about that in the USA, where MMA is growing in popularity, you know. And in MMA, you have guys like Anderson Silva and Jose Aldo that are on the top of the pound-for-pound lists, and they're very light guys.
Right.
It's probably sound like a broken record at this point, but I tell everybody all the time, the fight between Jose Aldo and Cub Swanson is the one that made me convince myself that I would never try MMA. A little late for me.
Yeah.
Those kind of skills that would either be a lend me the ability to defend against that or to be able to do that to somebody. That was just unbelievable to me. It's like 18
yeah.
seconds, and it was a flying knee right off the bat. I'll never forget seeing that. And then Cub Swanson just went face down into the mat, and he got hit with about 6 shots before the referee could even dive on top of him.
Yeah, Jose Aldo is an animal for sure.
Yeah, and you know, for that to be the measuring stick, it's got to be tough at some of the lower weight classes in MMA. You know that you pretty much you're gonna have to fight him if you want a belt at that weight class. You know? I don't know. That's rough.
Yeah, definitely. I tell you what, though, I like the Chad Mendez Jose Aldo matchup. Just I think if one person can grind Aldo out, it might be Chad Mendez.
Right.
I've talked to a couple guys that have trained with Mendez, and they say he's the most freakishly strong wrestler that they've ever grappled with. They all have the same story. So I in the Hominick fight, you know, I mean, granted, I at this point in my career would not take a fight with Jose Aldo, but you see a couple things wrong with his wrestling, and a couple things wrong with his takedown defense. I think a couple of shots that he had that he finished on Hominick, because Hominick's not the greatest wrestler, but his head was on the wrong side of the body on his double leg. Just a couple little things, you know what I mean? And then his defense off his back in the third round against Hominick. I don't know if it was because he was sick. You know, there's reports that he was sick and wasn't feeling well, maybe gassed out a little bit because of the illness. but I saw him like trying to use a lot of gi techniques in an MMA fight, and I know Nobu now is a big gi training camp. They train a lot in gi during their camps. So I don't know if that was the case or if, you know, he was a little bit sick, but Hominick definitely, you know, showed a couple cracks in the armor. Not to say Aldo isn't the best 45er on the planet, because he is, but, you know, it gave some of us a little bit of hope that maybe one day somebody might be able to dethrone.
Yeah, and it's one of those fights that also kind of revealed one of his gimmicks with the double left hooks, I think, to the body and the head. You know, he used that button so many times. And, you know, what happened?
Yeah, and
he knows that's coming and prepares for it. No.
Yeah, no, he's a devastating striker. I think he gave Hominick everything he wanted on the feet. Hominick's supposed to be the best, you know, striker at 45. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of, you know, how George St. Pierre fought Jake Shields and just kept it on the feet as much as possible and fought his game and won.
Yeah.
You know, kept it on grappling. In general, and actually, George St. Pierre has been known to. He's working with Freddie Roach.
Yeah. No, his boxing against Kostchek looked absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he definitely has appreciated the value of having a good boxing stance and strategy and all that, you know, and. The one thing I notice a lot in these fights is these guys need to start learning to use the leg kick like a jab in boxing for MMA. You know, I'm totally such a huge fan of just one after the other leg kicks, because it just takes the other guy's ability to strike away. Because in that stance, you know, you rely on the front foot a lot to throw the best punches, kicks, the whole deal. So if you take out that guy's lead leg by just kicking every 2 seconds to the knee, the thigh, wherever you got to kick on that one leg. I don't think guys use that enough. Do you use that a lot, the leg kick, the front leg kick?
I do. It depends on the stylistic matchup. You know, if I have a guy that I know wants to employ a classic boxing game against me, then of course, yes. Because usually that classic boxing stance, like you said, that lead leg is out in front, and it's very exposed, and it takes away all the power off, even off the jab, even more off the right hand when it's coming from a orthodox fighter. If he's a wrestler, sometimes it's a little tougher for me to defend takedowns when I'm throwing a low kick, because they'll eat the low kick on purpose just to make sure it's not a head kick, to eat the low kick and try to grab your leg. And it's a little tougher to defend a takedown on one leg. But the teep kick also, the teep kick and the low kicks, which like the front kick, which is the teep kick, and the low kicks, definitely when a guy's trying to use a classic boxing game plan on the feet against you, like you might have seen with Njokuani and the kid from England in this last UFC in the undercard. The kid was a classic boxer, and he got eaten up with a clinch on the inside, the low kicks, the teep kicks, especially against boxers. Also, usually the clinch on the inside, they don't really know what to do. When they're in that situation, they don't have. You saw the kid from England. I forget what his name is. They're calling him Dre in the corner, but he was on the Ultimate Fighter show.
Andre Winner, yeah, I saw that fight.
Andre Winner, yes. You know, he got clinched, and he really had no answer for what to do when he was caught in a bad situation in the clinch. He just toughed it out, but he got hit with so many clean shots. You know, after that first clinch. After he got clipped and then that first clinch against the fence, basically the fight was over. He was, you know, banged up after that.
Yeah, it was a tough fight for him. Tough styles.
But yeah, low kicks and front kicks, definitely against the boxer, always.
Actually, we were just reading the suspensions from that fight, though, and Njokuani actually had leg bruise that's keeping him out until December 30th. So.
I find all those suspensions kind of weird. Maybe because I'm fighting in Florida, but they don't give out suspensions liberally here in Florida, you know? I mean, every UFC, I see, like, these guys getting reported. They can't fight for 2 months. They can't fight. And even when they win, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's just that. I mean, it seems like there's a lot more broken bones and concussions in MMA. Where boxing, you get pugilistic dementia, and you get guys that have long-term effects later on in life. But
another reason why I want to get my goals out of the way and get out of sports.
Well, you know, it's kind of flying under the radar. You know, you wonder why these guys get busted doing testosterone replacement therapy and stuff like that. Well, you really have to be an intense fighter to do that kind of damage, number one, and avoid getting that damage done to you.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, there is a lot of that going around.
I think the UFC is trying to score major points by developing this fighter insurance. So that even the training accidents and all that gets brought into play.
Yeah, that's great. You know, kudos to Dana White for doing that. That's groundbreaking. You know, there's nothing like that in boxing.
Yeah. But the thing that both sports are always going to struggle with is retirement. You know, what do these guys do once they're all done? I read an article a few weeks ago called The 9-Year Rule. And it was a study of these fighters' careers. You know, after a certain point in their career, after about fighting that around 9 years, most people start to drop off.
Nice.
You know, so it's interesting, you know. Is the books still open on what kind of level of damage gets done in each sport? One thing that MMA has going for it as far as knockouts and brain damage and that sort of stuff is the flash knockout. Whereas boxing has a standing eight count, you know? So it gives, Tony likes it because of that, because it gives guys a second chance to come back. But, you know, people in the medical field would say that it just gives a guy an extra chance to get more brain damage in a fight. And
absolutely. Look, I mean, I'm not going to argue that point with you. You're 100% right. I like it for the dramatic aspect of it. You know, like I said, some of the greatest fights in history, you've seen a fighter go down. And I'm talking about fights like Marciano Walcott, Gotti Ward, all three of them, somebody was down. And you see a guy go down, crawling, trying to get themselves back up. You know, they got to survive the round. You know, they're holding on, you know, taking some shots. Yeah, you're right. It does leave a chance for additional injury. But at the same time, it also leaves a chance for additional greatness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, you know, and plus, we're all grown adults, we all know exactly what we're getting into, we make a choice to do it, you know, and we know what we're risking every time we get in the cage or in the ring, you know, so that's on us, you know, you got to educate yourself and know the risk and the reward, and if you're willing to suffer the consequences, then hey, you know, sign the papers. And let's fight.
All right. What would you say now was your best moment so far in the sport?
You know, winning a title with Combate Extremo was great. You know, I won the title twice. I think the second time was a little bit more gratifying, just because the guy I fought was a little bit established. He had fought for the title and beat one of their longtime reigning champions. And, you know, so I beat the guy that beat the guy. The first time I fought for, like, a vacant title. But yeah, you know, winning a title is always a big accomplishment. And that definitely, to date, is my favorite moment in MMA for myself.
And do you have a favorite style, submission, or strike that you prefer, if you can land it or secure it?
You know, I will always love to watch fighters that just go out to try to finish fights, regardless if it's on the feet or on the ground. You know, I just, the only type of fights I don't like to watch are people who are just, you know, playing position, eating up the clock, and trying to eke out victories all the time. You know, I love guys like Marcus Davis come in and throw bombs, but then again, at the same time, you know, I like guys like Damian Maia, who are constantly looking for submission. You know, but just guys that go out and try to finish fights and are aggressive. You know.
Right. And what would you say you enjoy most about mixed martial arts in general, fighting yourself?
I tell you what, I think it was Jim Lampley that called boxing the theater of the unexpected. I think MMA has way more variables than boxing does, and literally anything can happen. So that's what I love about MMA. You know, and I loved it about boxing too, but I just think MMA has a little bit more mystery to it.
Yeah, you know, like you said earlier, maybe you'll go over to the dark side one of these days. But straight up boxing. He doesn't even like hearing talk about UFC.
You got to understand something. I cannot bring as much to the table in the discussion. That's like me, you know, trying to talk about a sport like basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to be much more of a guy that can talk about football, and I can talk about strategies and, you know, play-by-play and all that. You put me in basketball, I'm like, yeah, the guy dribbles, he passes, he shoots. Well, did you see that foul? Huh? Exactly.
And so I can talk, you know, talk about the shotgun formation and this and that. Baseball, I could talk about, you know, pitcher painting the corners and, the different types of sacrificing and bunting and all that. Same thing with boxing. Boxing, I can almost call any strategy out there. UFC, I can't.
Right.
Well, that's how I got my start online, was writing about boxing. But, then I actually, it was about 2006, the Chuck Liddell versus Rampage Jackson fight was the first one I ever ordered on pay-per-view. And I watched that. I watched the first Showtime broadcast of Gracie versus Shamrock there that ended in much controversy. And that's when I first got into it. But I can remember being in high school in, like, 95 and hearing about guys like Ken Shamrock, Dan Severin leaving wrestling to go do this Ultimate Fighting, you know. But I had never seen it until they started putting it on Spike TV. And then, you know, the UFC came out of nowhere when Fertitta and Dana White got involved in this. But what do you think about the growth of the sport since then? I kind of get bothered sometimes when people just go automatically, instead of saying MMA fighting, they just say UFC fighting, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. I know guys that will say, yeah, I'm going to go train UFC. I'm like, what?
I hate that because, you know, it's like nobody would do that for wrestling. Nobody says, you know, I'm a professional WWE guy, you know?
Yeah. The girls, I tell you what, they're getting better and better. And it, not that some of the girls at the top level of the sport aren't great, but I just don't think there's as many good girls as there is good guys. So, you know. But, you know, the time will come where there'll be, you know, just as many good girls as good guys. And I enjoy watching them, especially I've seen a lot of the women fights. They are not as concerned with defense as men are. they are very concentrated on their offense, and I like that. It makes for good fights.
Well, actually, when I was in Massachusetts, I got to go to a lot of local fights that had female fighters on the cards. And one thing that I noticed, it seems like they just take things to another level because they realize that there's just very few women in MMA, and they're fighting for, like, all of womankind out there.
Right.
They're fighting not just for themselves and for their camp and their team and their relatives, but they're fighting for every woman out there that has to try to match up to a guy. You know, so I've seen some fights where both girls seem to have that passion for winning in front of a crowd, and just something extra comes out of those girls.
You know what? That's a good way to put it. There's something extra that girls bring to fights sometimes, than guys do. I tell you what, and it's maybe it's the X factor. I don't know what it is, but I don't know if it's a little bit more aggressiveness. But they definitely put on a lot of good fights, the women do.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And it's unfortunate that Dana White over the years has been so anti-women. And now that they have Strikeforce, which was the best hope for women for a while.
Right.
Now it seems like they're trying to kill the women fights. And they just lost their main superstar belt holder, Cyborg, because her free agency ran out. And they didn't sign her again.
Yeah, that is too bad. You know what? I know where Dana's coming from. I think in the sense that he just doesn't feel that there's enough quality fights out there to be made between the women right now. But I still think there's a huge market for it, and I think somebody's going to pick it up and develop it. And I don't think the women are going to be pushed aside by any means. There's always going to be people wanting to watch the female fight.
Now, is there anybody out there that you particularly want to fight that you think you can match up well with?
You know what? At 35, like at 35, there's not many people I would say no to, you know, in the world, to tell you the truth. I want to really get 2-3 more wins in a row, get my record up to 15-6, 16-6, and I want to go fight the best in the world. You know, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. You know, I'm 32. I want to, you know, get my fights in there with world-class guys and, you know, and open up my gym and start teaching and stuff like that and developing fighters myself. But maybe take a pro boxing fight before it's all over. What do you think about that, Tony? MMA guys going over to boxing.
I love it.
What do you think would happen if Jeff Lacy and Nick Diaz would have fought?
And I was going to say this. It depends on the rules. I mean, Michael Jordan, who was, you know, probably the greatest basketball player of all time, could barely, you know, break the lineup in minor league baseball. You take a guy, you know, even your greatest boxers, let me go current guys, you know, your Manny Pacquiao's, your Floyd Mayweather's, would they have a chance? Because, yes, they'd have a chance because they're so, you know, naturally athletic and so naturally gifted. Yeah, they'd have a chance in the octagon. But once, you know, they could take him off their feet and the guy grapples with them, they're pretty much screwed. But then you turn it around the same way. So it's like, your great basketball player would be very mediocre in the baseball field as your great boxer, you're very mediocre in the octagon. I mean, I called it, and you can even ask Rich, when James Toney was stepping in to fight Randy Couture, I said, James is going to get killed. Well, why do you think so? I said, because James is a guy, he likes to box in a very slow pace and fight inside real close. I said, he's going to give Randy way too many chances to take him down and tap him out. A minute and a half later, that's what happened. Now you take your great MMA fighters, a lot of them that are going to have, some of them have a good quote-unquote striking game, and they have a good stand-up game, but at the same time, they have a good stand-up game against other MMA fighters. But a lot of times you just see guys, they kind of pick up their feet a little bit to defend against a kick, which wouldn't happen in a boxing ring. So the guys that are your great strikers in MMA would be mediocre to average in a boxing match. So your great MMA fighters step into a boxing ring, that's like your great baseball player, your Albert Pujols, trying to step on the football field. He's a good athlete, but I'm not saying he's a great football player.
One thing about it.
I think you're being too diplomatic. I think Nick would have got killed against Jeff Lacy. I think.
When we talk about Nick Diaz and Jeff Lacy, how would they be competing?
Oh, in a boxing match. In a boxing match.
Even on the downside
of Jeff Lacy's career, I think.
Jeff Lacy is still on the downside of his career. But in a boxing match, you're right. No, I think Jeff Lacy wins that fight handily, probably by knockout and probably relatively early. If they did it in an MMA-style fighting, then Diaz destroys Lacy and probably quickly.
Yes, and I completely agree with the statement that you made that these guys that are in MMA that are quote-unquote great strikers, if they would fight somebody who fights regularly in K1 or a professional boxer in a boxing match, they'd get killed, you know. Being a great striker in MMA is kind of like being the smartest kid in class, in a class with learning disability, with an entire class with learning disability, you know what I mean? You get to an honors class and you're not going to do well.
You're not smart enough to play dumb.
Exactly. Yeah. But Tony, who do you got in? Who you got, Amir Khan or Zab Judah?
A very good question. Part of what I like to do with this website is write previews on fights, and right now I'm leaning towards Khan, and the reason I'm going that way is, okay, obviously Judah's in his 30s now. He's a guy that,
right,
you know, been competing on, you know, a high level for well over a decade. Both of the guys have suspect chins. That's what makes it,
yep,
interesting, because Marcos Maidana had Khan all but out in that fight, you know, last December. He had Khan hurt and in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
Can Judah do that? Judah has very fast hands. Remember, Judah for the first four rounds was on par with Floyd Mayweather a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
does Judah have the skills? Absolutely. But basically what I'm leaning towards is a Khan right hand landing before the Judah left uppercut or the Judah left hand. And I see it being a stoppage. I see it I could see it being a very short but a lot of explosive fireworks in the fight. I just got to go with the younger guy here, Khan. You know, and I'll say this: Khan has greatly improved since taking on Freddie Roach's training.
Yeah. I'm gonna take Judah just because I like the way he looked in his last couple fights. And he still looks really quick and really young. And I think he hasn't told anybody this, but I think he's broke again. That's why he dropped back down to 40 and started taking it seriously again.
I think he's one of those guys that lives out here in Vegas with Mike Tyson. He's a good friend of Mike Tyson's.
Yeah, he's pulling a Mike Tyson on us.
Yeah,
another fight that I'm looking forward to, Rich and I were talking about it a week or so ago, and then we talked about it briefly again tonight, is Floyd Mayweather returning, you know, to fight Victor Ortiz. And Ortiz looked great in his fight, his last fight when he beat Andre Berto. You know, he showed a lot of heart that people were criticizing him about. So, you know, Ortiz is a good puncher. He's a physical guy. Now, granted, on paper, it should be Ortiz being too easy to hit and Floyd being too fast. Floyd chops him up and stops him like he did Gotti back in 2005. But this is also the same Floyd that got rocked pretty bad against Mosley and hasn't fought, and at the time is going to be almost 16, 17 months. I said the one thing we have to take note of, is it going to be the old Floyd Mayweather or is it going to be an old Floyd Mayweather?
Yeah, I completely agree with that statement. I think taking 2 years at it, and then before his last fight with Mosley, he had another very long layoff. It was over a year, I think. You know, so that's definitely, you know, and from the looks of what happens to him outside of the boxing ring, I don't think he's up at 5 a.m. training all the time. You know, so I think one of these fights coming up, we're gonna see him turned old overnight. You know,
right,
from
right,
one fight to the next.
Almost like when it happened to Ray Leonard. Ray Leonard,
right,
he turned old fast when he fought Kevin Howard after he came back from the long, retirement with the detached retina. Then he left again, and then he came back to fight Hagler, and he brought some magic into the first, you know, 6-7 rounds of that fight. But then I thought Hagler, you know, took over big time. And then from there, Leonard just increasingly went downhill every time he fought. And we've had a chance to talk to guys like Al Bernstein on the show and some other guys that I work with.
Teddy Atlas, big advocate of Floyd. And even he said Floyd is going to come back because Floyd needs the money right now. Floyd is
yeah, right.
Money. He needs the money. He's in a civil case. He's in all these disputes with the neighborhood security. He's up for criminal stuff with the wife, the ex-wife, or ex-girlfriend. His whole outlook legally is a mess. So, you know, he's got guys that are charging hundreds of dollars an hour. You know, he likes to brag about how much money he can spend, but you can't keep up with that without fighting every now and then.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
So I think that's going to catch up to him in the sense that he might be jumping back into it before he's ready. And this is where somebody like Ortiz could come in and catch him. But
definitely.
You can't count on natural ability either. So who knows what to expect when he gets in there the next time. But I definitely think rust is going to be a bigger factor than it ever has been for him.
Hmm.
Now, what do you think about Kimbo Slice coming from the other direction, going from MMA to boxing?
I tell you what, man. I know a couple guys in both heavyweight in boxing and MMA. And these guys, let's say they walk around at 230. I'm like, you know what? Stay at heavyweight. Don't drop to 205. Don't drop to cruiserweight. There's a lot more cans at heavyweight than there is at cruiserweight or light heavyweight in MMA. You know, there's tons of guys out there that get paid because they're heavyweights, and they go in there and they fight and they collect the paycheck. You know, we can find you tons of those guys to go directed up, and we'll move you on to a big show. I think, you know, it's going to be the Kimbo marketing machine once again. You know, they're going to put him in there with guys that don't have the natural athletic ability that Kimbo has, and he's going to get by on it for a while, and he's going to get another couple nice paydays, you know, because of Kimbo Slice. And then, you know, he's going to take it, you know, he's going to take that step up in competition, and same thing that happened in the UFC, you know. It's these a lot of people think that because you're on YouTube and you're beating guys up in a shipyard that has never taken a class in their life, you know, they think you're a tough dude. You know, no disrespect to Kimbo, you know, he's trying to make a dollar in America just like everybody else, but you can't realistically think that you're going to get to a level where a guy's been boxing since he's been 12 years old and is a Golden Gloves champion. You're not going to beat guys like that, you know, just like you're not going to beat a guy like Matt Mitrione, who's been training 2-3 years longer than you have MMA. You know, I think it's a little unrealistic, but good for him for getting paid.
Right now, if I was training whoever Kimbo is going to fight, I think the first few fights, he's going to be going there with a guy that's basically, as soon as Kimbo sneezes, he's going to fall over. But I think even before he gets to the top-tier level, he's going to get to, like, a mediocre level, and he's going to get to a guy that knows how to box. If I was training a guy, I would say Kimbo's going to come straight in. He's going to be very square off. He's going to kind of have his head down a little bit, and he's going to try to wail his right hand. I would have a guy moving laterally, left and right, and pumping a jab, and making Kimbo swing wildly, making Kimbo, you know, keep, you know, pressing and keep trying to come forward and wear himself out. I'm gonna have my guy using lateral movement. Kimbo has shown that, you know, he doesn't have great stamina. In 3-minute rounds,
the only thing he has
one is work
a leg. You can't kick him in the leg in a boxing match, so that's the only thing you get.
True, you can still jab the living shit out of him.
As I always thought, you know, the secret to his downfall in the UFC was Dana White talking about how bad his knee was.
Well, it doesn't help.
After that happened,
I'll tell you,
the fighter, he got hit in the knee so many times that he couldn't fight anymore.
if I was training a guy working with Kimbo Slice and you give me a good athletic guy that can move and box a little bit, I think you got Kimbo out in 2-3 rounds.
All right, Shaw, well, that's our 60-second warning. Tell people out there how to find you online and give a shout-out to whoever you want, and we'll call.
Yes, thank you very much for having me, first of all. And I just want to thank my parents, first and foremost. You know, they're my number one fans, great biggest supporters. You can find me on Facebook. I'm the only Shaw, S-H-A-H, for bonus. On Facebook, I'm almost positive I'm the only single Shaw Bobonis on Facebook.
Such a common name.
There, you're right. You can hit me up there. Any questions, feel free to ask. I want to thank all my training partners at the Freestyle Fighting Academy in Miami, Florida. And again, thank you guys for having me on. Love to do it again sometime soon.
Well, Well, great. It's been good having you, and we'll keep an eye on you, and everybody else should too.
All right. Thank you very much, Ed.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
And the tornado is out.
Thanks for stopping by, folks.